The following is this week's recording of our live streams, which take place on Discord. We call these meetings kinship because we realize that the deepest mutuality is not one of biography or biology, but one of ideas. And this is a time for us to discuss the most edifying ideas that come to mind. You can join the Discord community to meet and interact with like-minded people via the link in the description. I hope you will enjoy the following discussions.
There is something that's been brewing in my mind. And I would like to approach the question of evil once again. This could be perhaps a part two. But I don't wish to make a case for the existence of evil in men, because I think you tackled that pretty well. Like, men is not evil, but rather ignorant. And all his wrongdoings are the result of misguidedness, right? I really understand that. But I wanted to make, I want to expand my understanding in the existence of evil as a concept outside of man. Because what if, rather than talking about evil in terms of does it make man a villain, right? What if we instead ask why, where did the notion of evil even come from? Because we have conceived it. We have put a name on it, right? It could be just like any other fiction, I understand. Not everything that we imagine is true. But at the same time, when we look at different sources for guidance, you know, we see it referenced time and time again. So I was just wanted to acknowledge its existence, not particularly inside man, but outside man. I was also talking to some lovely people in the community, and we had a lot of discussions about it. And some of the questions that we had were like, if it exists, right, are we choosing evil or is it choosing us? What do you think personally is the significance of the creation of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, right? It's a tree, whether metaphorical or literal, it's a tree that was created by God. So even God himself, according to the Bible, acknowledges that there is evil. So could it be something that exists outside us and then we tap into it? I do have some ideas about it, but I wanted to hear your thoughts about it first.
Okay. There's a lot in what you said, so we're going to have to narrow that down to at least for a starting point to some specific question within that. So if you want to sort of pick what from all of that you would like to start with, just try to formulate that in a sentence or two as a question or whatever it is, so that I can respond to it.
Okay. Basically, can evil exist as a form, as a concept that is outside of men?
Well, it would have to, wouldn't it? If it's a real thing, just like any other idea, just like any other concept, it exists independent of anyone who perceives it, or anyone who takes part in it, or anyone who fights against it, whatever it may be. It's an external thing, just like the idea of justice, right? When you adhere to the idea of justice because you think that's the right thing to do, then you are aligning yourself with something that is, of course, outside of yourself. You did not invent justice. No one did. But we can partake in it or not partake in it, and in fact often do so, come out of alignment with it. And then again, the idea of evil would have to be connected to that, right? Why do people go against justice? Because if justice is true and good and right and proper, then why would anyone ever act against it? Right? And this is sort of already getting to the heart of, if evil exists, how does it why does it exist? How does it come about, right? And it's tied to that question. So essentially, it's the same question as asking, why does injustice exist? Right? And when we think about it that way, we see not only every day, but we see it in ourselves, that even though, and this is an assumption based on me knowing the people that are in here, that we all here think that justice is a good thing, as I think pretty much all human beings do. And on top of that, specifically, though, we try to adhere to it. We try to align ourselves to it. We try to do the just thing, which simply means doing the right thing. But so many times, even though we are believers of it, and I'm, again, speaking of myself and the people that I know for a fact live this life, that even though we're believers of it, even though we are adherents of it, we often still do unjust things. Now, how does that come about? So whenever I do something that is not in alignment with justice, I know for a fact, since it's myself, that I haven't done that because I was evil. But 10 times out of 10, I see that I fall into it, into injustice, due to ignorance, misguidedness, whatever you want to call that. In other words, I make a mistake. In other words, I'm unaware of what I'm doing. Whenever I'm doing injustice, I am of unawareness. And whenever I am in full alignment with justice, I am aware. Ignorance and unawareness is the same thing. No one ever makes a mistake in awareness. No one ever makes a mistake knowing that they're defeating their own purpose. No one ever makes a mistake knowing that they're conflicting themselves, contradicting themselves, harming themselves, damaging themselves. No one does that. Yet it happens. Yet they do it. Mistakes are happening. Wrongdoing is happening. Injustice is happening. Cruelty, violence, dishonesty, deceit is happening. And why do I assume, this is my way of thinking, you asked me, so I'm just explaining that. Why do I assume that even though every time I make a mistake, it's out of ignorance, and I can see that clearly? Why do I assume that other people's wrongdoings are somehow different? Why do I assume that they know what they're doing? And that they truly understand, and that they are never unaware. They're always fully aware, like the Buddha or something. Someone who's reached full enlightenment, full awareness. They know exactly what they're doing at all times, and it's never a mistake. And whenever they do wrongdoing, it's because they're evil. Why do I assume that in other people? But in myself, clearly, I see that it's misguidedness or ignorance, unawareness, mistake, accident. Now, again, as I always say, this does not release me of any kind of obligation towards the laws of the land. If I make a mistake, if I do wrongdoing, if I do injustice, whether it's out of ignorance or pure evil, I am just as accountable. Nothing changes about that. What changes is our understanding of humanity, of people, of ourselves. As the ancient Greeks say, know thyself. It's the ultimate goal in everything. When you know yourself, you know everything. Everything. Especially about human nature. When you know yourself, you're a human being. You're no different than anyone else. No one's special. And that's good news. Everyone has the same nature. Everyone has the same spirit. Everyone has the same potential. Very different in actuality, but identical in potential. So if all my wrongdoings are due to ignorance, how can I assume it's different with anyone else? And so that's why, in my opinion, evil, the way we think about it, does not exist, because, or rather, it does exist, but what we call evil is actually misguidance. But whether it exists or not, to get back to your question, as an idea, as a concept, of course it exists outside of ourselves. And we fall into it. If evil exists, then we fall into it. We don't invent it. We don't create it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense how you put it. Because it reconciles what I was coming to understand, right? Evil does exist. We have conceived it conceptually, right? But like you said, I like how you put it. We fall into it. It's like it also answers the question, if it exists, like, who approaches such evil first, right? And to me, because of your answer, I'm coming to understand that it is ignorance, the turning away of virtue, that it is an awareness, that turning away of goodness, that that is what approaches that evil first, perhaps out of fear, perhaps. So I guess I don't want to get into the whys. I think you put it correctly when you said, like, all speculation like comes from imagination, right? I guess looking and trying to understand the divine, right, and God, and we see, okay, so Gaia is this being, force, energy. But why then would such a being allow the creation of this evil? Like, if we didn't create it, right, we fall into it, how can we explain the existence of it? Or does it, or do you think it's just superfluous or like irrelevant to ask, like, why does evil exist? We just have to stay away from it by being Buddha-like figures, you know? What do you think?
Well, you know, again, this is my opinion, but I would say evil doesn't exist, so there's nothing to run away from. But I understand if you want to keep calling ignorance, unawareness, evil, I understand it. It becomes a semantic difference rather than a real difference. So we're totally on the same page in that regard, that all unawareness is, in a sense, evil. Sure, I can go along with that. But it's important to say that, just like you mentioned, it might be an irrelevant question, because, okay, two issues with that. Number one, you're trying to figure out God's intentions and God's reasons, and that's just not something that's given to you. And much more importantly, you don't need to figure that out in order to know how to live your life, and why to live your life, and how to understand all the things that you need to understand and is pleasurable for you to understand. You don't need to know that. You truly don't. I mentioned last time, I'm guided by the principle that I want to find out all the fundamental, universal, and timeless truths that don't require me to go into speculation. I want to find truths that hold no matter what the current situation demands. In other words, I want to know how to live, how to be fulfilled, how to be on the side of love and truth and always in awareness without having to know how the universe came to be, what God is thinking, what's going to happen in the future, certainly not what other people believe, what they are thinking, what they are doing. I want to find a system that is independent, literally, of every single thing. And it's very much so possible. That's the most amazing thing that I've experienced in the last years. Everything I believe in currently works regardless of their reasons. So however it came about, it works. Number two, why it's, in my opinion, unnecessary, and in fact, it could also misguide to try to figure out God's reasons, so to speak, is that you might be asking a false question. And when I say you, I mean everyone. Because when you ask the question, why does evil exist? If you would get a response, you very might well get the response saying, evil for whom? You always have to keep in mind that every question you ask from your often personal, individual, but at the very least, human perspective. Right? When an earthquake happens in Japan and so many people die, they might ask, why was this necessary? And how could this possibly be good? And they see it as a bad, and then they ask the question, why do bad things happen to good people? But if God would speak to you in the way that humans speak, God might as well say, bad for whom? And we have to realize that even if such a thing as evil exists, or bad exists, it would be bad for whom? Maybe it would be bad for you, but not bad for me. Or it would be bad for me, but not bad for dolphins. I don't know, right? Or bad for our planet, but good for billions of other galaxies. And so how do we get to say, how do we know, how do we pretend to know that we know what's good or bad in terms of specific events in the world, saying this event is bad, this event is good? How do we know that? What we can know is good or bad is, for example, is acceptance good? Is it good to align one's will with God's will? Or if you don't like the word God, with the universe's will? If that's too esoterical for you, with reality's will? Because events do happen. No one denies that. And it's not a matter of opinion that events do occur in the world. And every event that occurs in the world, the sum of that is what we call reality. Everything that happens equals reality. And so when I say accepting reality, I mean accepting the events that make up reality exactly as they occur. So if I make my will overlap with the will of reality, in other words, if I accept as real and as necessary every single thing that happens for the very fact that it does happen, right? If I say I accept this event because it is happening, and I accept that it is necessary because it is happening. If it wasn't happening, it wouldn't be necessary. If it wasn't necessary, it wouldn't be happening. And if it wouldn't be happening, it wouldn't be reality. But since it is happening, it is reality. It's so simple, right? And self-contained, this is what I mean with when I say I'm trying to be independent of everything. It's self-contained. You don't need to know, is there a God? Is there no God? What is God thinking? What is God doing? No. Every single thing that happens makes up reality. No. And so you have the choice. Do I accept reality or do I deny reality? And what are my chances of successfully denying reality, by the way? Do I get to tell the events to not happen, things that have already happened? Do I get to call them bad? Because calling them bad is to reject them. But they literally don't even understand the word bad. When you go call an earthquake bad, it literally does not understand what you're talking about. And so it's not going to stop. And if you call it good, it's not going to increase its magnitude either. It's going to happen exactly the way it was going to happen. It's going to have happened exactly the way that it already has happened. Nothing changes. So whenever we say this is good, this is bad, this is evil, this is good, and why does bad exist? Why does evil exist? We are asking a question, in my opinion, that is incompatible, that does not register with reality. Reality literally does not hear it, does not know what you're talking about. And so you can't get an answer to that because it's not a real question, right? The question only is, why does this appear to be the way it appears to be from my perspective? And God's not going to answer that for you. That's something that you can and must answer for yourself. And that's what philosophy is. That's what religion is. That's what thinking is. That's what doing the work of life is, whatever you want to call it, right? Because human beings do want to understand. And this is another reason why the idea of evil exists in people's minds. Because we all want to understand things. We want to understand why and how things come about. And when we see wrongdoing done by human beings, we see the outcome, we decide that we don't like it, and then we try to figure out, why does this happen? And one of the answers that we get to that is, oh, that person is just evil. Evil people doing evil things. Makes sense. And so it's an explanation for us. So we can say every wrongdoing, at least done by humans in the world, we can ascribe to the notion of evil. We can just put it in that category. And so then it makes sense. It's something that we can understand. The thing is, because evil is in fact misguidance, people are calling the wrong thing by the wrong name, and so it's creating confusion for people. This is why evil is such a otherworldly, othered, monstrous thing, because it's literally not human. It's not what's going on in humanity. It's what's going on in some sort of imaginary, illusionary monster. That's what evil is. You often see it in language when people call other people evil. They also often refer to them as monsters. Right? Everyone who believes in the idea of evil believes in monsters. And it's sort of like, as a child, monsters under your bed. It's, you cannot understand them because they don't exist. And so it's this major confusion. Why does evil have to exist? It makes no sense. It's so destructive. It's terrible. And I feel like it's inevitable. And so this whole worldview snowballs out of that, where we look at every wrongdoing, every mistake, every unawareness, every ignorance, every accident, even natural catastrophes, like I said, as evil things. And then we see the world consumed by evil, because it's just this little me who's trying to be honest, who's trying to be good, against a world of evil. And it becomes this depressing, heavy thing on your shoulders, which is exactly what fear is. And fear is an illusion. And so whenever you understand something, for example, when you understand evil as all wrongdoing coming from unawareness, misguidedness, ignorance, then you also understand human nature, and you say, I've been misguided. I've made mistakes. So it's not this ununderstandable, unimaginable, scary monster under your bed anymore. It's clear and obvious what it is, how it comes about, how it can be prevented, how it can be solved, and how it can be understood. And so while evil is a very, very scary concept, misguidedness is not at all. It's very understandable, very simple, something we experience every day. And we can see exactly where it comes from and what it does and each individual step of how we get there. But with evil, no one has any idea how evil works. And no one knows where it comes from. And no one knows where it's going. And no one knows how it operates. I wonder why. You see what I mean with all that?
Yeah. So much to unpack.
I know.
Something that I would like to understand in your thought process is discernment. I know it's different from judging, right? Because discernment is with reason. So right now we are in this kinship where understanding the universe, we're asking questions, and we are in the act of examination, right? And yet you said that some questions are false, and right? Some questions in asking the why can lead us to be not compatible with reality. So how do you know? How do you personally know? What is your moral, where's your internal compass when it comes to what to examine and what not to examine? Is it, you know, because these questions of evil, we can go down a rabbit hole, I understand, but in the act of walking the road, we can realize or we can expand compassion to those people that have committed wrongs, right? Because we're understanding evil. So I can see like some merit. I know that you don't think all questions are bad, right? But I just wonder, how do you discern what path to keep walking on without being lost in the why?
Yeah, that's the question of all questions, right? And, you know, I'll tell you, but of course, as I always say, I want to make it very clear. I'm not getting it right every time, that's for sure. And I get misguided and I make mistakes and I fall into ignorance as well in that very particular way of sometimes when I see, think I discern something, I'm really judging it. Or when I pursue a question, it turns out to be, well, that there's nothing wrong with pursuing a question and then understanding that it wasn't a question that should be pursued because that's how you find out. But sometimes I do not pursue questions that should be pursued, for sure. But to me, in my opinion, the difference between discernment and judgment and knowing how to pursue one idea and not another is if imagination is involved. Whenever we get into hypotheticals, whenever we're trying to figure something out by what if questions, it's the same with evil, right? Whenever people discuss evil, if you talk to them for longer than 30 seconds, they'll come up with what ifs. And they'll say, you know exactly what they'll say. They'll say, what if you were in Nazi Germany and you're hiding, right? And they'll say, you know, is that not evil? And they do the same thing with when it comes to discussing honesty. Like, one should never lie. Oh, okay, so now imagine yourself being in this scenario. As soon as we do that, we go astray. As soon as we speculate, we go astray. And speculation, like you mentioned before, speculation and imagination are together. You cannot speculate without imagination. It's not possible. And so, and whenever we speculate, we go wrong. It gets confused, it gets muddled, it gets away from reality, from truth, and it becomes something ununderstandable. And so to me, the clear signs that I should stop or that I'm doing the wrong thing is if whenever I start speculating, if a question requires me to speculate, it's not either possible to pursue or worth pursuing. Either way, I don't pursue it. And if what ifs are also speculation, right? But again, imagination is the more important concept than that, I think. As soon as the imagination comes in, it's going to lead you astray. As soon as the imagination comes in, it's going to tell you lies. And you're going to think they're real. And it's going to turn into an endless chase of chasing down the lies, the illusions that you yourself created. And so you become this factory for illusions that you don't have to work through, and you're just adding to your plate. When something is truth, it comes to you in a moment, in a second. And it's sort of easy to demonstrate to that. I often use the example of, you know, if I came to you and this is a what if question, but it ends what if questions. That's why I like it. If I came to you and said, you know, I'll give you $10 billion. Right, more money than money. All you have to do is take this little cat and throw it down a cliff. As soon as you do that, I will give you this money. And no one will ever see that you did that. No one will ever know. And that's all you have to do. 1 second of that and you're rich beyond your wildest dreams. As soon as I said that to you, in your mind, you already decided, no. Not for any money in the world will I do that. It didn't require you to imagine. It didn't require you to speculate. It didn't require you to go into, but what if, but what if, but what if, but what if? With that money, I could do a lot of good in the world. That didn't even come into play. As soon as you heard it, you said, no. For no money in the world, absolutely not. I will never, ever do that. Because that's truth. It's such a clear situation in terms of justice, in terms of knowing what's right, that it's clear. It's so clear. And so, clearly, to have clarity, you don't need imagination, you don't need speculation, and you don't need what ifs. All of those things take you away from truth. The devil will speak in your ear and say, but what if? But imagine this. Imagine this you could do with $10 billion. Imagine that and imagine this, which is also at the same time speculation. Right? So I just wait for that. Whenever there's a question, whenever there's some confusion, whenever I want to explore something, truth swoops in. If it's worth pursuing, if it's really truth, if it's not an illusion, it's there. Yes, no, this way, that way. It might not be the answer to end all questions. It might just be a clear indication you need to go this way as you're exploring this. To further explore this, go this way, not that way. That will be clear. I'm not saying, like if I ask myself the question, is there evil? No. that it just comes to me like, and that's the end. That's not what I mean. What I mean is, in exploring evil, what way should I go? Obvious. Truth will tell you. If you give yourself to justice, if you give yourself to truth, if you give yourself to goodness, to love, if you, in other words, go against hate, don't allow it for one single second, and all the opposites of all these things, truth and justice, you cannot go wrong. You're taking away options from yourself by fully dedicating yourself to truth. You're taking away all options that go against it. And truth will tell you when something goes against it. So in short, these are my red flags. If it requires speculation, I don't do it. And I do not engage in what ifs. If a question can be figured out without hypothetical examples, then it's good to pursue. And it will be able to be pursued. But if it seems to require what-if questions, then it's not worth pursuing, because hypotheticals never show up in experience. If you need a hypothetical to think about something, that means it has never shown up in experience. And if it's never shown up in experience, it is of no value, because you will never come across it. You're just being an academic. You're just being an intellectual when you sit there and think about hypothetical things that no one's ever dealt with in reality. That's never come up in reality. If you want to do that, that's fine. But when it's about figuring out the way, a way of life, how to actually, in reality, in experience, dedicate yourself to truth and justice and to everything that you know is good, in that mission, it's wrong. But hey, you say, I'm an academic, I'm so intellectual, it's so interesting to me. I want to think about these completely abstract things. Fine, that's okay. So it depends on what you want to do. But yeah, for me personally, like I said, as soon as it requires speculation, I'm out. And as long as it requires imagination, I'm out. Because if it's truly valuable to me in terms of it's going to change my life and it's going to help me in my understanding of humanity, the world, every single thing that I want to know, and I cannot find it in experience, well, then it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist for me. It's never going to become relevant. You see what I mean by that?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What I'm understanding is that good reality is self-evident, whilst evil must justify itself. And when there is justification, there goes the hypotheticals, the imagination, the what ifs, and wow, I'm blown away. because it really answers on my quest to understand things, how to shine a light. Am I walking in the right path, right? Because every path, you know, in the search of wisdom can lead to Rome, but like, we don't want to just wander around in the dark forest, right?
Exactly.
So that is a huge help. I know I'm like smiling, if you can only see. It's just your words are really reverberating to me. And I'm so grateful I asked. And I can see some people write in the chat some interesting insight. I haven't read them yet, but people also like have this in their minds. And I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, thank you so much. Can't thank you enough. Yeah, I think this is it for me, though.
No, and I want to say, first of all, thank you for everything, but especially for asking that question. You know, we we always think about, and we discuss that a little bit, like specific things like evil, right? But we don't often discuss the tools, the methods of our so-called work of life, right? We can consider ideas in themselves, but there needs to be a tool, a method, a system, not a strict one, not one that we put above everything else, but some tools that we use, right? And so this is what guides me. And I want you to know everything that has worked for me, because this is what philosophy is. Philosophy is finding the highest good for oneself and then sharing it with others, not at all as a way of charity or anything like that, but simply because the highest good is so good, you want everyone to have it. Like, it is my selfish, personal ambition, for the lack of a better word, that everyone has this, for me, selfishly. Because the more people know about this, the easier a life I'm going to have, right? If I meet someone and they know about the idea of awareness and unawareness and all the perils that come from unawareness and ignorance, and they know that that's within their control, it's within themselves, they can give it to themselves and no one else can take it from them, and they live a life according to knowing that control that they have, and they keep themselves in awareness and all the beautiful good things, the justice that comes with that, why wouldn't I want more people like that around me in the world, right? Every time I'm in a car in a red light, I want everyone else in the red light to think like this. I don't want those people who are ignorant and unaware and would think, well, what's the big deal if I run a red light just once? I'm in a hurry. I need to go somewhere. Other people run it all the time. Why can't I? People who think like that, they are a danger to us physically, and they are not our kin spiritually. And so the more people know about, the more people think like this, the more people have these ideas and tools and things, the more enjoyable of a life we're all going to have. And you pointed that out by asking that. You're saying, okay, all these ideas are good and nice, and we can receive them from our books, but how? How do we not fall into these things, right? What's our method? And like I said, I don't have the perfect method. I maybe even don't have a very great method, but I can see that every good thing I've ever discerned about this world came from this method. And so maybe I missed a bunch of things because of the imperfection of this method. But every good thing that I did receive comes from this. And so I want to tell you about it. Thanks to your question, I was able to. And for you, everyone, to consider. And then you take it and hopefully you make it better. And work even better for yourself. But that's for you to do. No one else can do that for you. So thank you very much for all your questions. And also, I'll move you back to the audience, but I also want to say that I really enjoyed the posts you've done recently. That's where we got to talk a little bit about imagination, speculation being related. And I just generally enjoy also the creative words that people put into these posts and that you have been recently. It was a good example of that. And so that's why I encourage all of you, journal, write, put your ideas into something. That's why we have the book club section. We have the question of the week. All of these are places of opportunity for you to develop a thought. Just the thought of writing it out is where all the benefits are. It doesn't have to be that someone else sees it and comments and you get into a discussion about it and you gain new insights about it. That can be very valuable, and it is very valuable. But the most valuable thing about it is that you put it down in the first place. If you don't put it down, it will be in your mind, and that's the most important thing, but you won't be able to nail it down. Perhaps. And I will take our next speaker.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Thank you for this kinship today. And thank you for being here, everyone. Thank you, Orion, for your questions as well. It was very nice. I have some thoughts about the question of the week.
Yes, the question of the week, to remind everyone, is what is more important, intention or outcome?
Yes, so when I first heard this question, my gut feeling was that outcome is more important, because you know that's what happens, you know, in reality. That's what this is what happens, whatever the intent is, that is what we judge each other by, you know. But then I thought about it again, and I realized that if you have a good intention, it's always going to be better than whatever the outcome is. Because if you have a reasonable intent, and reason is good, it's truth, then the outcome, even if it fails somehow, it's still better than, you know, if someone wanted to hurt someone, that was their intent, but it turned out they didn't succeed, it's still bad. But you know, the other way around, it's, you know, I think you understand. And there was also a saying, I don't know where it's from, we judge others by their results and we judge ourselves by our intent. And I think that's because we have more information about ourselves, because we know what we wanted to do, and we don't know other people's intention most of the time, or even if they say it, we don't know if they are lying or not. So we just look at their actions and try to discern their intention. And even in, you know, in law, or in, there's a legal action, and for instance, someone kills someone else, you know, it's really important what was the context, you know, what was it, self-defense, or what is it, there was a murder intent, so and so on. So even in legal ways, there's a difference between intention and the outcome. So, but if I wanted to say a more personal reason, recently there was a situation in my school where our professors wanted to award the best students in the class, and one award was going to be awarded by a voting system, basically. So the students can vote for the best student. And there's another one where the professors pick someone they think is the best. And when they did this, I didn't really think about this. I thought it was weird, but okay. But later on in the afternoon, the most students protested, or, you know, it backfired, basically, because they didn't really understand the intent behind awarding people, because this hasn't happened yet in our school. So they didn't understand what was the point of awarding someone, and it just makes everyone else feel bad if they don't win it. And it also causes a lot of problems in the community, you know. And so because we didn't understand the intent, it basically backfired for them. That's what I wanted to share about this.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. It's very good to see that you've engaged with the question of the week. Not only that, it actually, just by engaging with it, it changed your mind. And in many ways, it must have changed your entire world view. I mean, it sounds so simple, intention or outcome, but what you lay more importance on changes your entire worldview. And, you know, this is a funny way of thinking about this, but I've been watching a lot of videos on sort of getting people getting parking tickets and it's the silliest thing, but you really get to see human nature when they come out, wherever they come out, and they come to their car and they see that they've gotten a ticket. For example, if it's a person who parked in the disabled, the handicapped spot, but they're not disabled and they don't have a disabled sticker or anything like that to prove it. And you'll hear their reasoning. They'll say, but I went in there to get something for someone who is disabled. And so they think because of that, the outcome should be different. You know, so they lay all importance on what they can get away with rather than their intention, because they knew in their intention, in their volition, that this is a disabled parking spot and they're not disabled. They have no right to park in it. They know that. But their intention is to ignore it because they think they might be able to get away with it. And so the outcome of getting away with it is more important to them. Whereas a person who lays more importance on intention, even if they knew for a fact that no one's going to check and that they're going to get away with parking in that spot, they still wouldn't do it, because they'll say it would still be my intention to do something wrong, and I don't want that for myself. It's the funniest thing, and all people justify all their crimes based on the outcome. Small like this or bigger things like many other things that are happening in the world, right? And people will say, often you'll hear them say, the ends justify the means.
Yes, and I wanted to hop in on this. And I thought about changing the words. What if you say, instead of intention, you say direction and outcome for destination? So if you put the direction above everything, then, you know, it's more important than the destination, because it doesn't matter how you get there. The point is how you get there.
Exactly. And that's so true, because where you are trying to get, and this is true for everyone, everyone is trying to get to peace, right? There's no single person on earth, they might call it different things and they might not even be aware of it, that that's what they really want. But really every human being wants peace. They want to be content and they want to be free. And all of that is peace, right? And so different people try to get peace in different ways, but that's really what they're doing. And if you want peace and you think, for example, being wealthy will get you peace, right? And they value money over everything and they steal and cheat and deceive to get that money, then they are never going to arrive at the destination of peace, because they're troubling themselves. They're making themselves people who are deceitful, who are liars, who are thieves, who are cheaters. And thieves and liars and cheaters are never at peace. And so you're right. The way, even if wealth is peace, the way you get there is everything. And if you can't get what you're trying to get in the correct manner, with the correct intention, with the correct direction, then in fact you don't want it anymore, because it's going to defeat your purpose. You're doing it to get peace, but it's going to defeat that purpose. And so you wouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it for your own sake, for your own selfish sake. You should not do it then. But people don't understand this. People think that outcome is everything. As soon as they get what they desire, for whichever reason they desire it, that's all that matters. But so many times it happens that people do get what they wanted with the so-called wrong means. And then they wonder why they're still not happy, why they're still not at peace, why they're still have anger and resentment, and why they're still so frustrated with the world and with everyone else. It's because they didn't put their intention right. They didn't have the right direction, as you say. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
There's a saying that came to mind. I don't know if I'm going to paraphrase it. It's probably from Nietzsche, I'm not sure. He says that while fighting monsters, be careful not to become a monster yourself. Something like that.
That's exactly what it is, right? You become your enemy. You become that what you hate. So the intention is to love or to hate. So as soon as you choose hate, you will become what you hate. But if you choose love, you're also going to become what you love, by the way. And so intention really, well, truly is everything. And that's my opinion. And if someone disagrees with that, we should discuss that too. Don't not speak because you know I think differently. That's all the more reason to speak because that's the only way, not the only way, but one of the very, very most valuable ways that we actually learn things by respectfully disagreeing and by exchanging views. Otherwise, we're just agreeing with everything we say. And there's still a lot of insights to be gained from two people who agree with each other, of course. But just as many, if not more, between people who would disagree and who can have a conversation properly, right? And so I encourage you to speak, especially if you disagree. But yeah, this is why I think intention is everything. And coincidentally, how amazing is it that between intention and outcome, it is only intention that is up to us? Our intention is in our full control. And we have no control whatsoever over outcomes. And some people say, oh, but you can have some control. As you know, as I always say, partial control is not true control. If you have partial control, essentially you have no control. You can have some influence on something, but it's going to come at a great cost. It's still not going to go where you want it to go or in the way that you want it to go. And you're going to be fighting the whole way through. You're going to be fighting the whole way through. When you have partial control, you have just enough control to fight, but never enough control to be at peace because you have to fight. And so only full control is true control because full control requires no fighting. And therefore is peace. And you have full control over your intention. No one can come up to you and say or do anything to you other than manipulate you and misguide you, perhaps, but that's not true control either. There's nothing that they can say or do to change your intention unless you also want to change it. But then it's because you wanted to change it, not because they wanted it. No one can come to you and bribe you to do anything wrong if you have given yourself to truth and justice and you know the difference between intention and outcome. No one can do it. You'll say, that's not important to me. Even though I might very much need that money, not like this. You will say, not like this, because it defeats the purpose, and the purpose is peace. And so, thank you very much. Is there anything else you wanted to say or ask or anything?
I guess I just wanted to point out in the question that it was which is more important, outcome or intention, and it doesn't say which is important. So just because you are well intended doesn't mean you are not responsible for the outcome. And
Absolutely. Absolutely.
so yeah, I just wanted to point it out because just that just because you are well intended and there's a bad outcome or something that's not preferred, yeah, you are still responsible if you are the one who did it. So that just
Absolutely,
pointed
because
out.
we are in control of our intentions, right? And if our intentions lead us to the wrong place because we're ignorant, we're still responsible. And that sort of ties back to the question of evil that we discussed before also. So thank you very
Yeah,
much for that. Is there anything
yes.
else?
Yeah, just one more. Do
Yeah.
you think there's evil acts, but so there's no evil person because they are just misguided, but are there still evil acts?
I mean, that sounds like a semantical thing to me, you
Oh,
know,
okay.
because if evil doesn't exist, I mean, sure, we could semantically say evil acts still exist, because evil just really means bad, right? But if evil really is misguidance, then I would just say misguided people do misguided acts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to call that evil semantically, fine. I can understand that. I know what you mean when you would say that. But yeah, it seems more of a semantic question than something that really will make a difference. Again, that goes back to our experience, right? The way we actually look at the world. I would just say, if evil is misguidance, if that's what you believe, again, I'm not telling you what to believe, then also misguided people just do misguided things, right? Or they do wrong things, certainly. Wrongdoing is still wrongdoing, whether it comes from misguidedness or evil. Nothing changes about that. Again, the intention is only different. When we think of people as evil, we assign them a different intention than when we see their misguidedness. Evil, this is why I'm also so against the belief in evil, because evil masks intentions. The idea of evil masks intentions. Whenever we see wrongdoing, we just say, oh, okay, that's an evil person. But when we see them as misguided, we say, that's what they thought they were doing. And they're ignorant. They don't understand how this works. And so they're falling into this wrongdoing, which is truly criminal and truly harmful and really bad. But I can see it where they made a mistake and how they did that. Right. And again, it doesn't excuse anything. It doesn't change anything whatsoever. It's just, it takes that hatred away from us. That's the real value of seeing that all evil is misguidedness. Because we hate evil, but we can understand and very much empathize with the misguidedness, because we ourselves are right now, all of us, as we sit right here, we are misguided about something at all times. And so how can you judge anyone else for being misguided? But you very much can judge someone else for being evil, because evil is just this catch-all illusion of a term where every wrongdoing you just assign to that, and you're better than that because you're not evil. It masks things. It confuses things, and it makes things blurry. And that's the biggest advantage you have when you see that all evil is actually misguidedness, because you're seeing clearly what's going on rather than this veil of monstrosity, right?
Thank you very much for your answers and your thoughts. And thank you so much for this kinship. That's it for me today. Thank you so much.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you for your questions. That was very excellent. And thank you for your answer to the question of the week, most importantly, because that was really great to see that simply the mind acting on its own can change its entire worldview. Here again, I want to point out, this is a practical result of all the theory that we discuss here. We always want to have a perfect balance of both of them. We don't want to just talk about theory. Here again, in front of everyone here witnessing it, here was a person who engaged with a seemingly simple question and to change their entire worldview just by engaging with it. I hadn't said anything yet about the question of the week, right? So there was no outside influence on this person. It's the mind acting on itself. It's the most beautiful thing to see. And I will invite our next speaker right away. Hello.
Hi. I'd like to talk about the question of the week.
Excellent. So once again, the question of the week is, which is more important, intention or outcome?
So initially when I was journaling on it, I thought of roughly the same ideas as you just said. So I thought intention was more important because it's fully within our control. And nothing can change our intention unless we decide to change it ourselves. Whereas the outcome of your intention is not fully within your control. And I thought that's why the virtues are intentions. And there is no thought, emotion, or other than, which is an outcome of one's intentions, which is a virtue. I also thought that outcomes are more prominent than intentions. So it's easier to confuse which one is more important.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I think it's very important to point that out. I just want to say that before you might have more to say. The connection between virtue and intention, I think, is a very amazing one that I don't want to pass by. I hope everyone heard what you just said there. It's so, so important. This is why virtues, this is why to adhere to them, because they're just like intention is. And in fact, you're saying the same thing. They are fully in your control. Virtues are intentions. It's so true. And vices are outcomes. Such an important distinction you're making here. It's really quite amazing. Virtues are all intentions and vices are outcomes. You're absolutely right, because every vice is an intention gone wrong. It's an outcome. Right? And every virtue is the right intention. So important. I'm going to think about that. That was very interesting. I never thought about it like that. Thank you for that.
And I noticed that it's easy to judge how, well, at least for me, it's easy to judge how at peace I am based on the thoughts and emotions I feel, and also what I write when I sit down to journal. And your peace of mind determines those things rather than the other way around. So those were my observations.
That's also, I think, very true and very insightful. Thank you for sharing that with us. And this is why I wanted to make a question of the week. You and the speaker before are pretty much pointing out all of the reasons already why I wanted to make this the question of the week, because it gives you so much power, or rather it shows you how much power you really have, and you're off dealing with other things. You're off focusing with other things. And when I say you, I mean everyone, myself included. And so this is why this is so valuable to think about. And I thank you for that. I'll move you back to the audience for now. Again, very grateful about what you shared, the connection between intentions being virtues and vices being outcomes, essentially, is a very, very interesting one that I'm going to keep thinking about. So thank you for that very, very much. And I will invite our next speaker right away.
Hi.
Hello.
Do you, can you hear me well?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. Well, this one is a bit personal. I hope it won't take too long. Otherwise, please let me know.
Okay.
Try to make some notes so I can keep a line in my story. Thank you for your work and your attention. Also to everyone else here, I'm new here, but I'm very glad to be a part of this this community. First, to paint a little bit of my personal situation. I'm 43 years old. I'm currently at home from a severe burnout due to overworking for many years, 50, 60 hours a week, sometimes even more in the evenings, the weekends. I always loved my work, still do, especially my being a software developer. But it was a little bit too much. I had a lot of responsibilities trying to do too much, keep everyone happy, my boss and colleagues and personal life. But ultimately it led to an existential crisis for a major part due to worrying about having a lack of a partner, thinking I'll never find someone romantically, missing intimacy. This results in a lack of self-esteem in that department. Also, to a lesser extent, a fading of passion in my work, because I didn't see the benefits in that anymore. Didn't really help reach my happiness life. So I got a lot of anxiety, panic attacks, etc. Now currently I'm unable to work sick at home, but accepting it was just only getting worse. So the accepting it was now I think a good thing, because it was almost literally killing me, and realizing life is more than work. I'm sorry, is this taking too long already? But
no, it's up to you. I mean, whatever you need to say, you need to say. Only you know that. But we're ready for whatever question or insight that is connected to.
Yeah, I'm almost there.
Okay.
I'll try to keep it short. So now I'm working on myself, work of life, living in the here and now. Thanks in a big part to your videos. Thank you for that. Trying to not worry about the past and future. Doing what is only what I can handle now, but now, like easy walks, taking for small things, etc. Now, the ironic thing is, the best thing ever in my life happened recently, unexpectedly. I did find a perfect romantic partner. Rather, it found me, because I totally gave up in this regard, not expecting anything. And it sort of results now in a conflict, because I want to spend a lot of time with her, yet things are very soon too much still, even good things. But thing is, she has about the same problem. We fit together in that respect, I think, very well. But at the same time, it gives me more anxiety, I think, because I work, I worry too much about what to do. And I will become more intimate with her. And for me, it's a very new thing. So I have not much experience and stuff. So finally, the actual question I have, Even though this might not be a fully philosophical one, but I hope this is okay. But the question is, how can I try to stop, to stay calm, to make this romantic relation, ship work? You got any ideas on that?
Yeah, and this will be my personal advice to you. It's not, it doesn't mean it's truth. It doesn't mean anything, but I would suggest, strongly suggest that every single thing inside of you that hopes for this to be the perfect relationship, and every single thing inside of you that worries if this will be and continue to be the perfect relationship, and that every single thing inside of you that is working so hard to make this a perfect relationship, I suggest that you go ahead and kill all of that. Because it's going to lead you to suffering. It already has. You're already suffering from the expectations that you have on this person and on this situation. You're literally saying you are hoping for a perfect romantic partner, and now you're saying that you might have found that perfect romantic partner, and you're saying that now you're worrying about it.
Exactly.
All you're worrying about it comes from your expecting of it. Because you're having an expectation is a narrative. So you made this narrative that to be a full human being, a happy human being, a peaceful human being, a fulfilled human being, that you need some kind of, not only some kind of, but the perfect romantic partner. And so now this person, whether they want to or not, whether they even intend to or not, they hold all power over your happiness and over your peace. And if this person really is right for you, then they don't even want to do that. They don't want to hold power over your happiness and over your peace. So you are making them do something that is not only against their own will, but it's also against truth and justice and love and peace. Because you are not at peace right now because you're worrying. And you are not loving this person right now. Because you're putting expectations on them. And as soon as they fail to be, see, they can only fail to be because you expect them to be perfect. As soon as they fail to be perfect, and they're going to because human beings are not perfect, you're not perfect, you're going to start worrying even more and you're going to start resenting this person. You're going to say, you seem to be perfect. And now I found out you're not. How dare you make yourself look perfect at first? You deceived me, essentially. Even if you don't consciously say this, there's going to be that part, that voice in your head that says this. Oh, this person seemed perfect. And now I'm seeing imperfections. Why didn't I see those before? It must have been because this person was hiding them from me. As you are, by the way. You have or are hiding things that you don't want them to see. And so you're doing that. And if they are the same kind of human being in their own human nature are doing the same thing, you are going to turn this narrative, this expectation, into a narrative of deception and lies and deceit. And then you're going to get disappointed. And then you're going to get resentful. And then you're going to get frustrated and depressed once again. But if you track it back, it all goes back to your expectations. So, and there's that part of us that puts expectations not only on people like this, but on everything. You put expectations on your career, on your work. You put expectations on what you will do and are able to do with the money that you make from that or the reputation you gain from that. You put expectations on your friends, whether they supported you throughout your burnout or not, right? And on your family and all those kinds of things. Do you see how expectations and narratives, which originate completely from your own mind, have and continue to make you suffer?
Yes, I do. You're totally right. Yeah.
So don't get into it again. Don't do it again.
Yeah.
Right? You just found someone, and again, I don't know you. I don't know this person, but they might be right for you. I'm not saying, you know, everyone wants a friend, right? And romantic or not, every single in your life needs to be a friend first and foremost. You know that. And mm-hmm. So essentially who you're talking about here, romantic or not, is a friend. And so, of course, there's nothing wrong with having a friend. But you're not supposed to need a friend. You're supposed to want a friend. Are you familiar with the difference?
Yes. Yeah, I am.
If you need a friend, then you're going to say, I need you to be a complete human being, a happy, peaceful human being. And you're going to, I guarantee it, disappointed. If you need someone, you will be disappointed. It's not a question of if. You will be disappointed. But if you just want someone, because you say, hey, I like to do this, and I like to think about these things, and I like to work on myself, as you said, right? And so there is nothing more joyful to a human being who works on themselves to be in the presence sometimes of another person who works on themselves also. There's nothing more useful to a human being who works on themselves than another human being who works on themselves. And so in that sense, it would be right and proper and beautiful for you to simply continue this, not work on it, not expect, not build something, not force something, but to simply continue it. Vice versa, if this is a person who's not working on themselves, regardless if they share the same problems with you as not or not, we all share the same problems, by the way, I want to tell you. We all share the problem of ambition, of narratives, of expectations, of resentment, anger, hate, all these things. We all share that. What we don't share with most people is the fact that we're working on ourselves and that we're seeing that while pain is mandatory, suffering is optional. A person who works on themselves cannot benefit from a person who thinks that suffering is mandatory and who builds narratives and who builds expectations. If this person is someone who does not have expectations on people, who does not judge people, who does not live in a world of narratives that they constructed, then I beg you, leave this person alone, because you're putting expectations on this person. And so leave this person alone. But if you are ready to let go of expectations, if you're ready to let go of narratives and judgment and resentment and anger, and this person is doing the same, then I would say that these two people are right for each other, naturally. And it's not me saying that, it's truth saying that, it's love saying that, because love does not expect, love does not judge, love does not sacrifice. Love does not suffer, and love does not expect or demand. And so love is saying that. I'm not saying that. So if this is a person like that, but you are not a person like that, leave them alone. And if you're a person like that and they're not a person like that, leave them alone again. But if you both are, then you're right for each other. Love says that once again. And so either way, this is something that you're going to have to decide. But regardless, of course, also don't do it for this person. You're supposed to do this for yourself, to let go of expectations, of narratives, of resenting the world, of resenting others, and building all these narratives that only lead to disappointment and expectations and judgments. If you're ready to do all of that, you should do it for yourself anyway. And only come in contact with people, so far as you can help it, that are also doing the same thing. If you both are doing this, or are ready to do it, or are truly working on yourselves, then nothing can destroy that anyway. So you don't have to worry. Because these people are conducive to each other. They're magnetized to each other, essentially. And no one can destroy that. Vice versa, if it's not right, you cannot make it right. If it's not right, you cannot make it right. Okay? So either way, whatever is going to happen is what you want to happen. If it's going to work, it's going to work because it should have worked. And if it's not going to work, it's not going to work because it should have not worked. So you're fine. You have nothing to worry about. Life will tell you, reality will tell you, truth will tell you if you are making a mistake or not. And either way, the outcome will be exactly what should happen. To expect a certain outcome is once again to engage in narratives. Don't expect for this to go well, so to speak, air quotes, right? And don't expect it to fall apart either. Expect nothing. Expect nothing. If it's right now, this is all you need. And whatever happens, happens, and it will be the exact right thing, whatever happens. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I'll try to, implement this this really helps. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and just continue to work on yourself. I always say, I tell to everyone, regardless of who they are, there's no deadline. There's no pressure. This is all stuff you left behind in your physical world, the career, okay? In the realm of ideas, in the realm of truth, there is no such thing as a deadline. There is no such thing as pressure, as you need to figure this out now, otherwise everything's going to collapse. No such thing. Truth is out of time. And so it doesn't care about time. There's no time. So you take your time as much as you need. And don't listen to fear. Don't listen to worry. If you don't do this quickly enough, it's all going to fall apart. You are not worthy of it anyway. They're going to realize that at any moment. All these kind of voices and ideas and thoughts are illusions, because fear is an illusion. And so don't listen to it. All you have to do is focus on yourself. Work on yourself. Wherever that work leads you and however long it takes. Never, ever ask how much longer.
It's something I'm in my mind. I know this is true, but still, I'm not fully there. So I have to.
And that's okay, because your reason is telling you that this is true, or what is true, and your fear is trying to get you away from truth, from reason. And so this is the battle. This is all there is. So when you say, I know that this is true, but I'm still feeling that. Well, that's exactly what there is to work on. There's nothing else. There's nothing else. Think back of the days where you didn't even know about this, where there wasn't even a battle, because you were all just consumed by fear and ambition and by illusions and by narratives and by expectations. You didn't even know the difference between truth and misguidedness. Now you can see it. What's bigger than that? So relax, take your time. And when I say relax, I don't mean just let whatever happen. You do have to work on it. You do have to have some sort of tension on it, right? But it's not the tension of fear and worry and anxiety. It's just the tension of, I'm going to dedicate myself to truth. Okay?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. This is
I appreciate it. And so thank you for speaking here and thank you for being here. And I, as always, I appreciate just seeing people out in the world working on themselves and looking for real solutions for real problems or issues or challenges. And so I'll put you back to the audience for now. Thank you again for being here. I think that was very valuable to all of us to sort of think about that. Even though it's more on the practical side than theory, which is great. We need a balance of both, as we talked about before. And so that was very beautiful to see your honesty and your openness to the situation that you're in. And you know what you need to do. And you can always come back here and discuss and talk and sort of, when the whole world tells you you're crazy, this is our place. One of the places, of course, there are more, to realize, no, all of that's an illusion, actually. And so I will take our next speaker.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Good to see you again.
Hi. It's good to see you. I hope you can hear me. Well, I'm outside, so it's a little bit windy.
Yeah, it sounds surprisingly good, actually. Very nice.
Good. So I've been having some thoughts on the previous question of the week on following the judgment home and then seeing where it takes you.
Right. So the previous question of the week was observe yourself judging someone or something and follow that judgment home. What particular belief or idea does it go back to? Yeah.
Right, right. And so I've been reading Simone Weil recently, and she talks about this idea. I don't even want to call it an idea. I guess this force, or just this concept that we call attention. And there is attention in the sense of like focusing on something, right? Like that we, you know, I'm paying attention to this, or I'm paying attention to this. But when I'm saying attention, I mean attention in the form of something divine, something where we're giving our fullest openness and our fullest receptivity to reality, whether it's a person, a thing, whatever it is, that we're allowing ourselves to be completely unclouded and to be completely open to whatever it is that we're giving our attention to. And Simone Weil even says that attention is an act of grace. So what this makes me think of when I relate it to judgment, I would say that judgment actually prevents us from giving our attention. That when we're judging someone, we're making an assumption. We're making an assumption and we're saying, and I'm going to give an example, X person is good, X thing is bad, this or that. But notice what we're doing when we're making that judgment, when we're making that assumption, really. What are we doing, and how are we preventing ourselves from giving that person attention? And I think it's actually a tragedy how we'll go around judging people. I'll make this mistake. We'll judge someone, and then we're not giving them our attention. And I recall that you said that it's actually a selfish reason why we shouldn't judge people, in your perspective, that is, that, you know, why should we judge people? That's not something that we should that we should do just for the sake of ourselves, for our own purity, just for, you know, wanting others to be in a in that state and being surrounded by those people. But I would argue that it goes one step further. And I think that it goes to the point where, I mean, to give people the attention, we're not giving the world the attention that it needs. And we're, as a result, being blind. We're living in kind of an echo chamber. And this is what I kind of noticed with things and how things are going. And I'm talking on a very broad societal scale, where it tends to feel like we're increasingly getting like into our own space and being very, how do I put this? We're being very kind of just numb. So I really want to drive that point that we, whenever we're making a judgment, that we're not paying attention, that we're not giving whatever thing it is that we're judging the attention, and we're not being open. And I mean, I'll give an example here. Say there is someone who is in need of help, and who is, maybe they commit a particular act. As far as to say that that act is that person, or that we'll judge them, and then now we're not even allowing ourselves to be receptive to that entire, whatever it is, right? It's so much more. So that's the first thing I'd like to say. I was wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I have many thoughts on that. And that's an amazing insight. Thank you for sharing that so much, because it's, of course, extremely valuable. And you have just about said it without actually saying it. To me, attention and awareness are the same thing. Our awareness is our attention. Whatever we give our attention to, that's what we are aware of. And we are aware of nothing else other than what we give our attention to. And so you're absolutely right when you also say that when we judge, we give our attention away. In other words, we give our awareness away. In other words, judgment pushes us into unawareness. And those people who are constantly judging people and things are unaware people. You're absolutely right. And so they spend their lifetime essentially being unaware, not really living, being alive, but not really living. And that's exactly where judgment gets us. And a lot of people who talk about judgment and why not to judge always say, oh, it's because you don't have the right to judge other people, and you can't do that to someone else, and you're not allowed to do that. You have no right. And they're correct in saying that, but they make it the selfless thing. They make it this thing to do for others. To not judge becomes something to do for others, when in reality, to not judge is primarily, most importantly, something you do for yourself. Because every time you're engaged in judgment, you are unaware. And every time you are unaware, for as long as you are unaware, you are not really living. You are alive, but you are not really living. And this is exactly why not to judge. And so you're absolutely right in equating attention to awareness, essentially, or what we direct our attention to is what we give ourselves to. And when we give ourselves to judgments, which are illusions, then we give ourselves to illusions. And there's nothing more harmful than that, right?
Exactly. I do have something else that I'd like to share, and it's on something that you said about hypotheticals.
Mm-hmm.
I came across this philosopher, you may be familiar, Kierkegaard.
Mm-hmm.
And he poses a hypothetical of, say God gave this man a child, and then this then God comes down, and then he instructs this man to kill the child now. And so I'm not saying whether hypotheticals are good or bad, but I think that there is a certain value in engaging with certain hypotheticals, And I think arguing with a hypothetical is never worth our time. But I think that challenging ourselves to think outside of a certain, maybe certain box that we might in, that we might be stuck in, it can encourage us to remain, I'm trying to find the right word. It can encourage us to remain receptive, and it can encourage us to remain curious and to continue to expand our knowledge and our understanding. Because I think as human beings, we'll never be able to completely grasp truth with a capital T, right? And I think that is simply something that we cannot do. But despite that, I mean, take a box, for instance. And take someone, let's say someone is living inside that box. How can that person who is living inside the box make any truthful statement out of what's outside of the box? They can't know what's inside outside of the box. But yet, it's so easy to make assumptions. And so what I'm getting at here is that all we can know is that there is something beyond the box. And that is truth. All we can know is what we are not. So I think I'm just, as a whole, it can be with hypotheticals or without hypotheticals, but whatever it takes for us to just remind ourselves that we have limits in what we can perceive, we have limits in what we can do and comprehend and justify. But that's not any reason to stop this quest for truth. I think it's something very fulfilling, but at the same time, reminding ourselves of that limit that we have, that, you know, all we know is what's inside of the box. You know, maybe someone's shaking the box, maybe there's nothing outside of the box, but that's still something, right? But, you know, at the end of the day, we're still inside the box. So that's something else that I'd like to bring up. This isn't necessarily about the hypothetical, but rather what the hypothetical can do for us.
No, I think you're absolutely right in reminding us of the fact that really no action is always entirely right or wrong, that there's always a value even in things that are usually not very helpful. And that certainly goes for hypotheticals. What I just find, and what I also meant to point out with that statement, was that generally speculation is never about something that we know to be fact. That's why it's called speculation. Every single time we engage in speculation, we are making assumptions and we are talking about things that are literally not fact. Otherwise, we would just be speaking about facts. We would not be speculating. And so in that sense, hypotheticals are wrong, because hypotheticals are, as far as I can think, now you make me think of, if all hypotheticals are really speculation, maybe there are hypotheticals that are somehow not speculation. But in so far as we engage in hypotheticals in order to speculate, I think we are engaging in not the most effective method of coming closer to truth. That's all I really mean by that. But you're absolutely right. Yeah. We are sort of in many ways in a box. And sometimes hypotheticals or what if questions, I use them too, can point out something. I just don't like when we use what if questions to prove a point or to make an argument or to disprove something else. I don't think it's right to do that, because it's not based in reality. It's based in speculation. And again, speculation somehow, maybe perhaps, can be useful. But that's why I generally want to stay away from hypotheticals and speculation, because it is speculation. But you're absolutely right. We don't know a lot of things. And so sometimes we make guesses, and those guesses can actually lead us to something factual. And this sort of connects to the current question of the week as well, about intention and outcome, right? It really depends on intention.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you're using hypotheticals, if you have the right intention, you can derive some value from it, possibly. But if you have the wrong intention, even talking about facts gets you no further because you have the wrong intention.
Right.
And so that's very true to point out, to not really go into those extremes and to not generalize things so often. You're absolutely right. There's always
And
there's
I think this kind of goes back to attention even. And so for me, I can be a pretty obsessive person. That's just one of my tendencies. But I think if I'm going to be obsessive over something, sometimes it can be good to place myself in a question and then to spend time thinking about that question rather than something else that's not so good to be obsessing over. So I guess something to just keep me in a state of curiosity and in that state of seeking truth rather than just staying in what I already know and not trying to expand my horizon of what I think is truth. And then I'd like to get to the current question of the week, which is intention or outcome. And I would say, first of all, I'm a musician. I'm a classical musician. And as someone who's currently in, you could say, an environment where there's so many different people who have so many different approaches to music, as I'm studying music, there's a lot of tendencies to focus on the outcome of the music. There's so much tendency to just focus on, is this good or not? Does the music sound good, or does it have this particular quality? But I find that what's more important than anything, than any outcome, is the intention when you choose to play that piece. What is your intention? What are you trying to convey? What kind of emotions are you trying to express? And what is your objective? And clarifying that to yourself, clarifying that intention to yourself, and also not imposing your own judgments and imposing your own understandings and your own standards on other people's work. That's not something that we can do. But all this is to say that I think the tendency is to get focused on the outcome, but it really should all be all about the intention. And I find that when we're thinking about the intention, that the work sounds much more, in a sense, I would say more human. It sounds more real, more authentic. And I think that's for me, that's one of the greatest things about music, that I can spend so much time thinking about this piece and thinking about the intentions of whatever the composer is, or what my intentions are with this piece, who am I serving, and what these different components. And I don't have to think about the outcome. It can be all about the intentions that I have with this and what effect that I might want to have and what I'm trying to do with this. And also just because it brings me joy. And I think that's also something very important, that it's intrinsically something that makes me happy. So all of that is just to say that I do think it's all about the intention.
Yeah, that was beautifully said, and I appreciate the connection to music, because I don't play an instrument and all that, so it's nice to hear from that perspective. And you're absolutely right. It adds color and beauty to everything when you focus on your intention rather than the outcome. Focus on outcome adds so much anxiety and stress, and focusing on intention adds beauty and color. It's so amazing, really, to think about. And so, I guess I'll put you back to the audience for now, thanking you very much.
Yeah.
Because thank you.
Yeah.
There's so much to think about in what you said, and we thank you all for bringing all of that up. I mean, it's so interesting. As soon as you say Simone Weil, you have my attention, and especially when you talk about Simone Weil talking about attention. And it's so true, everything you said, of course, the connection between attention and awareness, and then also the importance of intention over outcome. And that's, I guess, also a good segue to talk a little bit more about the question of the week going forward. As you know, every question of the week goes actually for 2 weeks. And this was the first week. And we've already heard so much insight about this question and all the things that I intended to have this question address within you. But I want to particularly point out going forward for this next week for you to think about and actually apply to your life, the idea of control. We already talked about it a little bit. How focusing on your intention gives you all of the control. Notice, in every single thing that you do, when you focus on outcome, you become stressed out. Because you start holding yourself responsible for all the things that you have no control over. When you say, yes, I'm doing my best. Yes, I have good intentions. I wish everyone well. But regardless, the outcome can be very terrible. And so what can I do? How can I ensure? Well, I can't ensure that the outcome is this, but I will frantically start thinking about what more I can do, what more I can do. And you will start trying to convince other people. You will start wishing that other people would finally somehow see what you're trying to do so that the right outcome comes about. And all of that is stress. All of that is fear. All of that is worry, anxiety. And if the desired outcome does not come to pass, it turns into regret, resentment, guilt, judgment, all of those things. And realize, though, whenever you did focus on intention rather than outcome in something that you did, it gave you peace. You said, no matter what happens, I know I did the right thing and I did my best and I can do no more, literally, than to do my best. And the best is always done in intention, not an outcome. If you have the right intention, if you will stick with love rather than hate, if you will stick with truth rather than deception, if you will stick with kindness rather than anything else, you have nothing to worry about. Because you are not responsible of the wrongdoing of other people. And you have no control over it. Control and responsibility go together. And so you can rest assured that no matter what happens, you're okay. And you have done nothing wrong. And you gave yourself the highest good already, which is to think right, to be right, to do right. And there's nothing, there is literally nothing more than that. Into outcome, much more goes into than just your intention. All those things that you are not in control of, that other people rightfully are in control of, those things go into it too. And luck and chance and pure randomness goes into outcomes as well, as you know. So if you lay more importance on outcomes than intention, you are holding yourself responsible of what comes out of luck, chance, and pure randomness. Does that sound like a recipe for disaster or what? But if you hold yourself responsible truly to only what you really are in control of, which is intention, you have every right to be at peace. You have every right to be on the side of truth and justice and what's right and kind and fair and loving, because all of those things you can give yourself. And notice, all of those people who focus more on outcomes often violate what is true, what is loving, what is kind, what is good, because they're so obsessed with outcomes. They're willing to break the rules. They're willing to hurt others. They're willing to hurt themselves. They're willing to forgo their own happiness, their own peace, in order to focus on the future, to bring about in their minds some outcome that they think is best. And they will stop at nothing to bring that about. They will sacrifice every single thing in a tiny little hope of bringing out some outcome that they judge in their ignorance to be the best outcome. And those are dangerous people, naturally. So stay away from people who value outcome over intention. Those are destructive, dangerous, unaware, ignorant, and misguided people, as we all have been. Whenever we favored outcome over intention, we have been those things. So we know exactly what it feels like, how it happens, and what comes out as a consequence of that. Focus on your intention and stay away from everything else. You are not responsible for it because you're not in control of it. Okay, that's what I wanted to tell you about the question of the week, so that I hope you think about it a little bit and things happen. And they will happen. As I always say, if you dedicate yourself to your personal exploration of timeless and universal truths, you will find your own unique answers to all of the questions you ever had and ever could have. That's my promise to you. And you can hold me to that forever. Because I know for a fact that that's a question of when, not if. If you commit yourself to this, it will happen. And all that the work of life, that this exploration asks of you to enable you to do this, is your dedication. It does never ask you for intelligence. Some of the least intelligent people have done and succeeded at peace, at happiness, at meaning. And it does not ask for wealth. Some of the poorest people have succeeded in this. All it does ask, however, is dedication, which goes back to attention. As you know, it happens in every kinship meeting. Every time we talk about truth, everything comes round in a circle. We constantly see the connection of supposedly different things coming together every single time. And so it's no surprise here that dedication and attention go together. And we really do live in a universe where if you dedicate yourself to truth, you receive truth, and there's nothing that can block it. When you dedicate yourself to meaning, you receive meaning. When you dedicate yourself to love, you have it, and you have peace.